Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the trading voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Indeed, yes. Busy weekend it was.
Mate, it sounds like it. So at first I thought you were at some sort of conference. You weren't quite at a conference. You were at a trade show specifically for goalkeeper gloves.
So it's a huge trade show in Munich that takes place every year, and it's a blend of a few different industries, actually a lot of winter sports randomly, but also all the major goalkeeper glove manufacturers have stands there. So it's like the geekiest goalkeeping thing you could imagine. You're just surrounded by latex and people talking about different designs for gloves and the innovations that are going to be coming in the next year or two. So yes, I spent a day meeting with different manufacturers, understanding what the future looks like for goalkeeper gloves.
So how does it differ? What does the future look like?
Well, everyone's always looking to get a little edge. So it's interesting where you've got the different designs from some of the more popular brands, and everyone's always trying to find something that's just going to move goalkeeping in a slightly different direction. So I see, for instance, Adidas have just brought out their Predator glove, haven't they, which is a big deal at the moment. And it's something that more, it's not something I'm an expert in. I'll hold my hands up. I was always a classic rapper. That was my glove, which was like a real classic plain glove, really, that I would wear week in, week out. Whereas now, gloves have just gone above and beyond. And everyone's trying to find different technology to put into the gloves to make them a little bit more grippy, of course, make them fit that little bit better. Potentially when you're punching, to have areas of the glove to make sure your punch is going to be that much more secure. There's all these different ideas that people are putting into the gloves. It is, for a goalkeeping geek such as myself, it is quite interesting. I couldn't help but feel that as I'm having these conversations, I thought, God, if anyone was actually listening in, they would be falling asleep right now.
Hmm. It's not just your big hitters either nowadays, is it? Because on social media, you notice now that a lot of people have platforms always selling gloves.
Well, there's a lot of bedroom brands, I call them, that are out there. And do you know what? There's a real market for it, because ultimately, goalkeeping gloves, there's not a great deal of difference, I feel, between some of the top gloves and some of the bedroom brands, so to speak. But of course, the top brands will have a certain premium on. Some of the prices of gloves now are extortionate. So I think if you can find a brand that you like, then, you know, and certainly, obviously, this is the point where I mention, obviously, the brand that we're involved in, which is GK Icon, of course. Look, if you find a brand that you like and they're made from a good factory and they fit well, then a lot of people, it's not necessarily they have to go with these major brands. There are so many other really good brands out there. And it was interesting, the amount of people that were out there meeting the different manufacturers, trying to find something that is a little bit different, where they can find a way forward without being a major name. And there were some really good ideas out there. It was a very enjoyable couple of days.
Nice. Okay, little plug, mate. Where can you find the GK Icon gloves?
Indeed, gkicon.com. And actually, another little plug, because I got some interesting news on that front. So I have just recently taken over, once again, GK Icon Academy. So we're going to be growing a lot more goalkeeping schools. I think we've got about 30 or 40 odd now around the world, including New Zealand, America, a lot in the UK. And we're actually partnering up with a lot of coaches. So no doubt in the coming weeks, I'll tell you more about that. You can email us, though, if you are interested in partnering with me personally and the team that I've got that work on a lot of our goalkeeping schools. We are experts at building goalkeeping schools for coaches that are looking to build a goalkeeping business. By all means, get in touch.
Okay, I need to work on my W and my K. Can you help me out with that?
I mean, we can more than help you, Matthew. I think you've still got a chance.
Wonderful. Okay, well, look, let's get straight into it. Plenty coming up over the course of the next 20 minutes, half an hour or so. We're going to start with the FA Cup fourth round weekend. And I want to start with a couple of lumps that turned into a couple of goals. We talk about playing out from the back a lot on this show. And this was a hark back to the old school. First, Alex Bass, who we also spoke about recently. An assist for Ronan Curtis in the game between Portsmouth and Barnsley. Just one big old lump. It bounced. Curtis got on the end of it, and Max O'Leary, a goalkeeper you know well, of course, from Bristol City, on loan at Shrewsbury, a decent punt for the Jason Cummings equaliser against Liverpool. It wasn't a direct assist, but it was a flick on and a touch and then a finish.
It's interesting that I feel, and this football does this, it goes in waves and it shifts, and we seem to have gone to a position where everything became really short, the whole tick-attacker, playing out from the back, playing through the thirds. I can't help but feel that Liverpool have had a bit of an impact in this, that Liverpool have been quite direct at times this season. And I think that defences, because they're now being taught to deal with the style of football that everyone's trying to play, they're maybe not so accustomed to dealing with a little bit more of a direct style of football. And certainly from a goalkeeper's point of view, of course you have to do what the manager wants you to do, and if they've got a certain style of play, ordinarily you have to adhere to that. But I think if you've got the ability to mix it up, what it tends to do, and a bit of a coaching point, point is that if you can imagine, if you play out short all the time, then what happens to the opposition? They start to read you, they start to close you down, it makes it tougher and tougher to play out. Now, if you have the ability every now and then to go over the top, and a great example was Edison last season against Huddersfield, and for those that remember that goal, where he was playing short, playing short, playing short, then all of a sudden, 70 yards, boom, puts Aguero in, Aguero scores. That now changes the whole dynamic because, of course, the defence don't know if you're going long or short. They're going to drop off that bit more just in case you do go long, which instantly gives you more opportunity to play to your fullbacks, maybe play into central midfield, maybe clip it to the wingers, and it just gives you more space. So where possible, be unpredictable.
This doesn't specifically apply to goalkeeping here, going off track a little bit, but does everything always filter down from the top? Because playing out from the back, and you can say the influence that Pep Guardiola had in that, and that has gone all the way through to all four tiers of English football, even into non-league as well. But if Liverpool are suddenly going direct again, do managers and coaches from the lower tiers suddenly go, oh, okay, well, maybe we should start doing that again?
It does. The other part to this is, though, and I use Tranmere as a great example of this, because, I mean, for those who have seen the Tranmere pitch recently, it's certainly, that is a heart back to the 80s, you know. And of course, when you're at that level, you don't necessarily have the finances, the funds in order to have a pitch like Old Trafford or wherever it might be. So something I always remember from the Brentford owner, and he spoke about playing to percentages and playing a style of football that suits the conditions. So he said, look, if we were playing back in the 80s, then a long ball would have made much more sense because the pitches were nowhere near what they are now. So to play the style of football that Barcelona play, you're just not going to do it on that type of pitch. So certainly when you go down into the lower leagues, I think this is why League Two, National League in particular, maybe more direct teams can often have a little bit more success. You could argue a Danny Cowley's Lincoln last season, for instance, where they're reasonably direct and actually can have a bit more success because the conditions are that much different lower down. Not just the pitches, the fact that you'll feel the wind, you'll feel the rain, whereas you're playing at Old Trafford, you're not feeling any of that. So I think that the style of football can often be dictated by the conditions, and I think this is where goalkeepers can be intelligent. You know, as much as you're being told to play out all the time, if you turn up and it's wet, windy, a bobbly pitch, and your centre-backs, your full-backs don't necessarily have the ability of Van Dijk, well, then it might make sense to go a little bit longer in order to keep your clean sheet, which for me is always first and foremost.
Okay, elsewhere in that game, that Liverpool-Shrewsbury game, which was an incredible contest, to be fair. Sean Whalley, great save from Adrian. Now, in amongst all the drama, it kind of went unnoticed that, sticking out a leg, another good performance from him. Angus Gunn as well in the game between Southampton and Spurs. A brilliant toe-tip save is what I'm calling this from Lucas Moura.
Yeah, so again, as a coaching point, it's, when you're moving across the goal, you're moving laterally across the goal, it's very hard to dive back on yourself. So your position isn't necessarily central in terms of where the ball is and where the goal is. You're not, if you were to freeze frame it, it's not exactly right. If anything, you'd probably leave slightly more to the near post. Because of your momentum going that way, you're able to dive that way. Now, if they come back across you, realistically, your only chance of making the save is with your foot. So the key to this is all about positioning. Now, he got his positioning absolutely spot on in order to get the toe to it to make the save. But it's a very difficult skill, and it's quite hard to explain. But just try and picture that. If you are moving across the goal, you would leave ever so slightly more to your near, knowing that you can throw yourself down to your near and having that foot, that trailing foot, to be able to make the save.
Could he, however, have done better with the goal from Son? I looked at this and I thought, oh, is that a goalkeeper who hasn't been playing much recently?
Look, it's certainly not a goalkeeping error. And I mean, I'd argue no. I think if he makes a save, it's a world-class save. It's very different, by the way, a very different situation to the one he saved with his foot. You know, I've
heard could he have gone with his feet?
Well, a couple of people have said that. Could he go with his feet? No, is the short answer. And the reason being is that the shot is that far away. It's different. This is where it's not just about positioning. It's also about the distance between you and the ball. Now, of course, if you're very, very close to the ball, you can spread. You can do the long barrier, they call it, the De Gea, and make a save like that. Now, when it's a little bit further out, maybe 6 to 10 yards, that might be where your feet come in. And again, De Gea, we see make a lot of saves with his feet. And of course, Angus Gunn did in this. When they're shooting from where they are there, where Son's shooting, he's a good, 20 yards out. Angus Gunn's set 4 to 5 yards out. So no, 100% you have to go with your hands. The only minor criticism is, does he get enough power away in his dive? And that's, look, that's not an error. That's a case of, is it savable? Is there a keeper out there that can explode down? Possibly. I mean, it'd be interesting to see if a De Gea was facing that shot, whether he's got the athleticism and the power to get down to a shot like that. It's something we'll never know. But no, I think to criticise him would be very, very harsh. I think his positioning was fine. I think his decision-making was fine to go with his hands. I think the only thing is he just didn't quite have the power to really explode with the dive to get there and be able to get fingertips to it.
All right, moving on to the game between Millwall and Sheffield United. Another good win for the Blades and another clean sheet for Dean Henderson. Now, Michael Verrips started the previous round against AFC Fylde, had to go off injured in that one, so Henderson came in. But Henderson started this one. And his situation, I wanted to quickly touch on. Before I come to you, Rich, I spoke to James Shield of the Sheffield Express and Star. Great journalist, really in the know at Bramall Lane. Here's what he had to say on the situation with Dean Henderson as things stand.
And you can look at the length of the contract that they gave Michael Verrips, who is a young goalkeeper, the same as Dean. And looks to be, from what we've seen of him so far, from obviously what people behind the scenes are telling us, is a very, very promising goalkeeper. They gave him a four-year contract when he came in from Mechelen in Belgium during the close season. So Michael's obviously, you know, sort of one for the long term. But it was interesting, actually. I asked Chris on this after the game against Manchester City in the Premier League on Tuesday night, and he sort of made the revelation that talks had already started with Manchester United about possibly extending Dean Henderson's loan for a third season at Bramall Lane. And that didn't surprise me one little bit. And there was two reasons why that didn't surprise me. One, obviously it goes without saying, is the quality of the performances and the consistency that Dean is putting in. Two, and this is where I think it gets quite interesting, because obviously with every performance, almost with every save he makes, I think Dean's value goes up. And for a club like Sheffield United, who are very new to the Premier League and haven't had sort of, you know, 4, 5, 6 years of Premier League broadcast rights money coming into the football club, that almost puts him a little bit further beyond reach. But the one thing that I will say is, you know, Dean has got a really, really strong connection with the fans there. And I do know that he was very interested in sort of a year ago exploring the possibility of making a permanent move to Bramall Lane. Now, obviously, things have moved on since then in terms of the price that he might command in the transfer market. But Dean is not a player, and he said this explicitly in the past, who is going to want to go back to Old Trafford and sort of perform as a number two to David De Gea. I think he does see at the moment his long-term future as being Manchester United's number one. But if there is any sniff from Dean Henderson that he will be going there and sort of spending one or two seasons on the bench, I think he will want to possibly sort of change his parent club. And if Sheffield United can get over that financial hurdle in terms of what his value may well be now, I do just think that sort of emotional connection that he's got with the football club now may make it a little bit more possible, if they can meet that fee, to sort of reach some sort of compromise, as it were, in terms of the wages. And you know what? I'm not one to actually say that football clubs should gamble, but I think if Sheffield United do have to just push the buck a little bit further from what I've seen of Dean Henderson so far over the past two seasons, I think it would be more than worth their weight in gold to actually do that.
That was James Shield there of the Sheffield Express and Star. You can catch him speaking all things Sheffield United on the Sheffield United Fan Show on Love Sports Sundays at 9 p.m. Before I come to you again, Rich, I just want to quickly touch on what Chris Wilder has said on this situation. He said, if there's a decision for United for him to come out to us for another year, we'll gladly take that up. We've already started negotiations or talking with them, but obviously he's their player. He then went on to say that Dean Henderson wants to play first team football. Maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but I'm not so sure he'll play backup to anybody.
Yeah, I get that impression as well. I think that you look at what he's done, and this is a model for every young goalkeeper coming through. Look at how Dean Henderson's got to where he is, and it's perfect. Now, by the way, you don't always necessarily get the choice to do what he's done, and I think this is the beauty of being at a club like Manchester United, where you're that far down the pecking order initially that they can send you out on loan to the National League, to League Two, to League One, to the Championship, now the Premier League. And I think you're right, the type of character he is, and for those that follow him on social media, you kind of build up a bit of an impression as to what he's like. I can't imagine him being a number two. He has to play. He's got the ego in a positive way where he has to be number one, and that's what he lives for. So it will be a case for me that they're either going to sell De Gea, in which case I think he could go back there, and I think he will happily take on the challenge with Romero. Although, by the way, Romero, absolutely fantastic keeper, clean sheet after clean sheet. It's ridiculous, and I know that they're playing against small opposition some of the time, but his record is just phenomenal. I don't think that's an easy battle for Dean Henderson, but I think he goes back there if he knows it's a battle between him and Romero. I think if De Gea stays where De Gea is the outright number one, then I think it makes sense to do another year on loan, another year in the Premier League. Look, Sheffield United are going to stay up, so why not stay there? I think you can continue to grow at the club like he is now, and I think that would make a lot of sense for all involved.
And rounding up the FA Cup fourth round action, Scott Davies of Tranmere. Looking forward to hearing what you've got to say about this one, because he came out quite bolshy before their fourth round tie with Manchester United on Sunday. Big Manchester City fan, his family are huge Manchester City fans. Before the game, he said they always looked down on Manchester City over the years, they being Manchester United, but now it's turned around quickly. If myself and my football club can have an influence on them having another bad day, then great. I'm not a big lover of Manchester United. There's a big hatred for United in the family. Come game time, 9 shots on target for Manchester United, 6 goals conceded.
Yeah, I think the first 4 all went in. In fairness, there's nothing he could do on the goal. So, look, his performance is the life of a goalkeeper. Sometimes you can have a solid game and, unfortunately, the shots you face are very good and they beat you. So I don't think there's any criticism in terms of his performance. I'm aware that, or I'm led to believe that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer did say something to him after the game.
Apparently he said, thanks for firing up the fans and the players. I don't know how accurate that is.
No, I know. So we just be careful to read into that. Because if that is true, then that's a little bit poor from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Because I think you get the... There is an element of, when it's a smaller team against a bigger team, it's the moment of fame, isn't it? We had it at Brentford from time to time. You're playing the bigger team, and of course you're getting interviewed, and all of a sudden the press conference, rather than just being your local press guy, there's 15 people there. And it's exciting when you're at a smaller club and you get the opportunity. And the odd dig like this, it's all part of the fun of it. I mean, Tom Pope did it to John Stones, didn't he, recently? And, you know, it's all very funny, really. And, of course, all these players would love to be in the position to play at a club like that. And of course, he's a big Man City fan, so he said what he said. So if there is any truth in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer giving him a bit of stick, saying he fired up my boys, I find that a little bit strange. But no, look, it was one of those games really for Tranmere. I felt a bit sorry for them. The fact that it was a fantastic finish from Harry Maguire, nothing again Scott Davies could have done. And ultimately that then set them off on the right foot and they end up getting 3 goals in the first 15 minutes and it's game over. And you just felt that type of game, had Tranmere have held on for half an hour or so, with the pitch being as it was, they might have had half a chance, but it wasn't to be.
Commentary corner. I lied. There is one more bit of FA Cup fourth round action to discuss. This is from the game between Manchester City and Fulham. Commentary corner this week goes to Danny Murphy, Rich. Now, this is associated with the goal from Bernardo Silva. I'm just going to read it out. Of course, he cut in on his left foot. Didn't really cut in, to be fair. Fulham just let him have a shot on his left foot. He then hits it to what we're led to believe was the near post of Marek Rodak. You're already laughing. Right, okay. It comes back on his left foot. Gives the keeper the eyes a little bit, says Danny Murphy. Maybe the keeper should do better. Nevertheless, a good finish. The keeper's frustrated with himself getting done at that near post. The keeper got a touch. That's why he's disappointed. He jumped up. He was angry at himself. By the way, just before I go on, he didn't really jump up. He just got up and was angry. Just threw a customary fist to show his frustration at conceding a goal. Danny Murphy then went on. I'm still not sure he caught it as well as it looks. That's Bernardo Silva. I think the keeper, because he gets his hand to it, expects to save it, and he probably should. If he's getting his hand there, he should save it. He'll be disappointed, the goalkeeper. He's got a good side of it. But it's clever play from Bernardo Silva.
Yeah, okay. Right, where do we start? So, look, we talk about a lot on the show about analysis. And for a start, near post. I love this, near post. Well, technically, it was within the goal, effectively. You know, if you were to move outwards, it's pretty much within the goal. So to be near post, it effectively means it'd always be a near and a far post, if that makes sense. You could be one-on-one with the keeper coming centrally. What's the near, what's the far? So it wasn't near post. The other part to this is that when Bernardo Silva comes inside, as a goalkeeper, if your defender is there, the defender really should cut off that near post, in inverted commas, because that's what they're there to do. That ultimately, the defender's done a poor job here. So there is a fault there. Marek Rodak, I think his position's fine. If anything, the percentages say that the shot would ordinarily go to the other side, so you need to be ever so slightly further over. And now what's ended up happening, he's whipped it back across himself into that corner, and it's gone right in the corner. Marek Rodak gets a good dive away, fingertips, but can't do anything about it. So there's no error there whatsoever. It's a brilliant finish. Defender potentially at fault slightly for not being able to get a block away. Great finish from Bernardo Silva. Marek Rodak, he saves it. It's an absolute worldie. So how Danny Murphy can make any comment towards him, it baffles me. And the fact that he follows it up and tries to back up his opinion is just incredible. But this, again, comes down to the fact that nobody's there to explain what Marek Rodak's done. Which, put yourself in Marek Rodak's shoes, what's he done? First and foremost, as he's coming across, he's taken a very slight step to his right, because that's correct. That's where your position should be. You're expecting your defender to cover the near post. post, again, inverted commas. The defender doesn't do that. So once it's whipped back across you, you're having to dive back across yourself in order to get there. And it's a good finish. You can't quite get there. It's gone right in the corner, gone in the side netting. Absolutely nothing you can do as a goalkeeper. It's a very, very good finish. It's just a shame that nobody's there in order to give that analysis and explain it from a goalkeeper's point of view, as opposed to what Danny Murphy said, which then led me to press the mute button, unfortunately.
Moving into the Football League, and Joseph Bursic of Accrington. Now, what a story this is, by the way. On loan from Stoke, and he takes free kicks. We've seen him take two free kicks in the space of a week. I don't know whether he's done this before, to be fair. I've only seen it in the past week or so. Salford in the EFL Trophy, and then against Burton at the weekend. He's only 19 years old, which oh, yeah. I find staggering. He's been given this responsibility. John Coleman, by the way, upon signing him, Joseph has a good kick on him. He comes for crosses and he's a good shot stopper. So I just thought I'd give you that little nugget of information for you. Fantastic. But what do you make of this? Takes free kicks.
He's sort of the modern day Jose Shilliver, isn't he? Right. And in fairness, we've only seen the two free kicks and they haven't been successful. I just think that he must be incredible at free kicks, because there's such a risk to having your goalkeeper 80 yards up the pitch, especially when you put it into the goalkeeper's midriff, which he did. By the way, it was the fact the goalkeeper fumbled it. He wasn't able to then do a quick counter-attack. But imagine that you put it up, down, over the wall, the keeper catches it. All of a sudden now, you only need a half-decent counter-attack and you might have an empty goal that you can just fire the ball towards. So there is a huge risk attached to it. So I can only assume that he is a David Beckham or a level above a David Beckham. Otherwise, this is a huge risk.
Unbelievable risk. Ian Holloway on the Quest highlights on Saturday evenings couldn't believe it. He was flabbergasted. He said, where's the pride of your outfield players? Because that was one of his arguments. He's like, surely there's an outfield player who's better at free kicks than the goalkeeper.
Do you know what I would say now? And obviously we can use Edison and Alisson as a good example. But of course, look, ultimately goalkeeping, you're working a lot on your power, your agility, your shot stopping to an extent. But actually now, of course, the game's shifted and so much is distribution. If anything, you know, you used to look at a Gerrard and marvel at the way in which he could spray the ball 60, 70 yards. Well, of course, that's goalkeepers now. Goalkeepers should be the best players at hitting the ball 60, 70 yards. They should be able to manipulate a ball better than most outfield players when it comes to long passes, certainly. And I guess free kicks kind of drops into that. Now, the technique is different because ordinarily you're firing it and you're kind of firing it almost head height a lot of the time, like that drill, that almost stab, I think a lot of them call it, certainly the modern GK, for those that follow him on Instagram. He's got that kind of stab technique where you'd be able to drill it into a striker's chest or into the winger or over the top. It's a different technique on a free kick because it is that David Beckham lean off the ball, whip up, down, over the wall and into the corner. So he's obviously practiced this alongside what he does as a goalkeeper, because you wouldn't perform that technique as a goalkeeper.
Okay, elsewhere in the Football League, Alex Cairns, a goalkeeper who will crop up on this week's Goalkeepers Union podcast with an interview. Of course, we spoke to David Lucas, the Fleetwood Town goalkeeper coach. Alex Cairns, currently number one at the moment, fighting with Billy Crellin. 87th minute penalty save in the game between Bristol Rovers and Fleetwood. This was a great save.
Yeah, fantastic. Look, and I think from his point of view, it's been an interesting few years for him, really, because, of course, he was linked to so many clubs. West Ham for a long, long time, never quite happened. And then, of course, to lose your place, which he has done for a period of time, to a very, very good young keeper, it's fair to say. And as you mentioned, the podcast, for those that tune in, you'll get a bit more of an insight into Billy Crellin, but it certainly sounds like he's going to find his way all the way to the top. But you have still got a fantastic goalkeeper in Alex Cairns, and there's nothing quite like it. For those that have experienced it, and I've only ever had it once or twice in my career, where it's a penalty towards the end of the game and you know it is an opportunity. You make the save, it's an opportunity to be the hero. And of course, he did the good, sir.
He did. Just lastly, we're going to touch on some transfers in an upcoming podcast. We're basically going to review the transfer window. So I won't go into all of those now, but just a couple before we move on. Jamal Blackman, Chelsea's longest serving player, 26 years old, still hasn't played for the club. He's been there since he was around 12 or 13. He was on loan at Vitesse Arnhem earlier in the season, didn't play for them. This is now his seventh loan spell. He's gone to Bristol Rovers. Ante Yacola is out for the season, it would seem, with a shoulder injury, I think it is. But Jamal Blackman, another club for him.
Yeah, indeed. And it's interesting. I mean, look, this is obviously Chelsea's model in that they do loan them, and it's been very successful. Of course, some of the players that have found their way through, but of course, it's one of the hardest clubs in the country to find your way through. So Jamal Blackman, for me, a couple of years ago, I thought he was going to break in, and I thought by now he would be in and around the Chelsea first team. You know, certainly on the bench, I thought, because you look at him and he has everything. Great size, fantastic distribution. When he comes for crosses, he can look effortless, and I've really enjoyed watching him play. But for whatever reason, it hasn't quite happened. Obviously, very good at Wickham, and I appreciate that was in League Two. In and out at Sheffield United, it's fair to say, him and Simon Moore sharing duties there. And of course, he then had his injuries. He's gone abroad. Now Bristol Rovers, so again, back at League One level. I can't help but feel that there'll be a bit of frustration his end that it maybe hasn't quite gone as well as maybe he would have hoped, but it is an opportunity. And Bristol Rovers, of course, going well in League One. Maybe this is the springboard he needs, where if he can help them towards a promotion push, potentially, then, of course, I'm sure he goes back to Chelsea at the end of the season and going into next season, and maybe he will finally get an opportunity to challenge for number one spot.
As I say, we're going to do a special on all the January transfers, so make sure you catch that one. But just one more, the Bartman. Bart Bielkowski, yeah, signing permanently for Millwall.
Yeah, and look, he's made a real name for himself there already. It's been a real frustrating time for Frankie Fielding. He's just picked up another injury. Of course, one of the guys we had on the podcast, brilliant character, top, top goalkeeper, but blighted with injuries over the last couple of years. And unfortunately, he's got another one, which has meant that for Bielkowski, it's been unchallenged to an extent. I think it's fair to say. I know they've got Luke Steele on loan, who's been challenging for a period of time, but look, top goalkeeper, again, linked with so many top clubs, but has really built a solid career at that level. I watched him a couple of times earlier this season. He was excellent both times. Big game player. He's slightly unorthodox in a few of his ways, and I think he would admit that himself. But what he is a very effective goalkeeper. Every time I've watched him, he makes saves in big moments. When it comes to his distribution, other bits and pieces, he hits areas. He's very consistent in what he does. So I'm delighted for him. Big move for him this, and it's another opportunity to really stake a claim at the top end of the Championship. And who knows with Millwall at the moment. They're certainly going along very, very nicely. Could even be a playoff push.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Into the Derby della Capitale for keeper capers this week, Richard. Roma v Lazio. The Rome derby, massive game. Paul Lopez, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'd advise watching this. And I mean, we spoke off air about this, and there was a moment of the Jordan Pickford talking about the goal he conceded against Liverpool went out. This one's worse than that one, it has to be said, because that one, for those that remember the Divock Origi goal, where it kind of hit the bar a couple of times, didn't it? And Jordan wasn't able just to give it a hand over the bar, and in the end, obviously, it was a rather bizarre goal, but one that was quite costly. Now, this one's different, because although the ball comes down from a similar height, it doesn't hit the bar. The goalkeeper's gone up and he's decided to punch it, but it's a very strange punch. He almost cushions it.
Like upright.
Yeah, there's no real angle on the punch. Look, the only thing I can say to defend him, and I always try to defend a goalkeeper, you try and get into their head, you put yourself in their shoes. Now, what was he thinking? The only thing I can say is I don't think he'll have ever faced a moment like this before, because the ball's dropping vertically. And it's dropping by the side of the goal.
Well,
so
it was David Santon, the ex-Newcastle fullback, who had headed it right up in the air. Yeah. So it was a bad defensive header to an extent as well.
It was a bad defensive header. Then you're left with the decision, do you come and try and claim it? Now, it's a difficult one. When it's coming at that trajectory, you don't really deal with balls that come directly down like that. So he thought the safer play was to punch it. So I kind of understand that. But then you're caught in two minds. Do you then try and punch it away? Well, he's lost his bearings, obviously. So do you then punch it away? I mean, look, in hindsight, you look at it, he would have been best off just putting out for a corner. You know, in that moment, just put out for a corner. People would have asked questions, but it was such an unusual situation to deal with. I kind of understand why he was a little bit lost. And in the end, what he's ended up doing was nothing, really. He's almost cushioned the punch into the path of the attacking player. And of course, they score the goal, which is a bad moment for him. But it's one of those where I don't think goalkeepers listen to it, do watch it. The chances are, in your entire career, you may not face a ball like that. So it's hard to know exactly what to do. Look, in hindsight, the bit of advice I'd always give, if you're in any trouble whatsoever and you really don't know what to do, just put it out of play. Because it's something you can always look back on and learn from. But in that moment, if you try and take a risk or do something you've never done before, sometimes it can be costly. So, look, in this situation, I think if he had his moment again, he probably would have just punched it out for a corner.
Right, to finish, a nice story, although, I don't know, is retirement nice? I suppose you could say it's nice because we're going to do a little tribute. Dean Brill, the Leyton Orient goalkeeper, has decided to retire from playing at the age of 34. He's going to go back into his coaching role at the club.
Yeah, which, look, credit to him, because initially when he went to Leyton Orient, it was very much as a coach, and then he forced his way in bizarrely to an extent, and of course then helped the club gain promotion. And if anything, it'd be interesting, we'll have to get him on the podcast at some point. Can't help but feel that some of his best moments will have come in the last couple of years. So to be able to reinvent yourself like that, and to be able to get yourself back in a club, a big club as well, good club, of course, Leyton Orient, to get promotion with the club, quite an emotional time, of course, for the club. Now,
he was an ever-present last season as well,
yeah,
in that promotion run.
Which is huge, and you know, I certainly know myself, when you get into your 30s and obviously from my point of view, injury problems, other bits and pieces, to play every single game at the top end like he did is huge. And unfortunately, obviously, he's got the injury now, and with Vigouroux coming in and what have you, he's made the decision. Look, massive credit to him. As I say, I think we'll get him at the podcast at some point, I'm sure we will. But to be able to have the season he had last season, fantastic for him.
Absolutely. Great way to finish. Dean Brill there retiring from football at the age of 34. More than 400 appearances across spells with Oldham, Barnet, Inverness, Colchester, and finally with Leyton Orient. Lovely stuff. Okay, this has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
In association with GK Icon Academies, Richard.
Indeed, yes.
Goalkeepers 365 and Love Sport Radio. We'll see you next time.